Good morning, everybody. My name is Keith Floyd, and I am an alcoholic. I am from Northern New Jersey, Area 44. Is everybody having a good time here today? All right, and if you're not, you better call your sponsor. My home group's the Dover Group in Morris County, and my sobriety date is May 16th, 1990. And that's when God chose to separate me from alcohol, and for that, I'll be eternally grateful. I'm going to ask for a moment of silence and gratitude for the AA recoveries for the past 75 years. Right now, we have three other speakers. I just want to say, when I open my envelope, I always say yes when I'm asked to serve Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I woke, I always have this, I don't know about anybody here, but I always get a little fearful. I mean, right now, I'm not the studiest guy. And I opened up the letter, I was like, fear. I was like, a stepping stone. I was like, great. And, I'll speak for myself real quick. I know when I got out of rehab, I asked my sponsor, because I got when I got out of work, it was 3:30, and I did a lot of drinking from 3:30 on. And I was like, I was fearful. I was like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And he told me to read the big book and pray. And I was like, I hadn't read a book in years when I got sober. Years. And I follow that suggestion. I love what it talks about in our book about all men of faith have courage. I just was reading, I don't know, anybody here sponsor other people? Have any of your sponsees gone out? Well, I also read some Al-Anon literature. And one of the phrases I came across there was that courage is fear that has said its prayer. And I was like, wow. And that's what I do. I do a lot of praying. Real quick, I have a couple of grandkids. I've been blessed. My granddaughter is 2.5 months, 2.5 years old. And while she was in the womb, we got word that she had a tumor. And the first, fear. And I gave it to God. I said the prayers. And it never affected me. She was, believe me, a lot of people who know me, I have little videos of her, and she's screaming up her, screaming her lungs out. So she's a perfectly healthy baby girl. And, once I turned it over to God, that fear was gone. I have two twins that my daughter-in-law gave me, and they're about 4 months old. And while they were in the womb, we were told that one of them had two holes in his heart. And the first thing, gave it to God. Said the prayer, and I was able to go on with my life. Fear to me today is something, it talks about in our book that we ask God, and we commence to outgrow fear. My life is wonderful. I don't know what I would do if it wasn't for the 12 steps and other people who have guided me and showed me that prayer works. I wasn't afraid to use it. With that, I figured I'd keep it simple, and we're going to go right the way the program goes, and I'm going to bring up Bernard. Bernard?
Good morning, everybody. My name is Bernard, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm very grateful and a bit humbled to have an opportunity to speak to you this morning. I don't know how it happened. It doesn't matter. I suit it up, and I'm showing up. And that's the answer I got for you. It certainly wasn't to any connections or any manipulation on my part. It could have been on somebody else's. And I'm sure you can appreciate the fear I've had. And still have. I only went to the bathroom 3 times this morning. And I hope I don't have to go while I'm giving this little talk. It's so nice to be with Chrissy and Deborah. I had not met them before. And I want to thank all my friends in AA who who managed to come here this morning, whether they wanted to or not. They're here, and that's what's very important to me. What did I mean when I told you I was alcoholic? I mean that by myself, I could not stop drinking. I could stop for a while, but I could never stay stopped. And when I discovered that I couldn't stay stopped, I started to slowly realize that I might be alcoholic. And I was absolutely terrified that anybody would find that out. I live in a small place. My home group is the Kensington Group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Kensington, Prince Edward Island, Canada. On behalf of my home group, we welcome you to come and visit us. We open every Saturday night at 8 o'clock. And we're kind of a high-class group. We're in the town hall. And if there's no room in the meeting rooms, we just simply take over the chambers. I had great difficulty admitting I was alcoholic. And the fear that went with that was notorious. And I'll try and tell you quickly. I got a maximum of 20 minutes. And maybe you can already tell that I can waste a lot of time saying nothing. It gets better. I practiced law for 44 years. And one of the most profound judgments of one of the justices I was appearing before was this. Bernard, you do a great job of saying nothing for a long period of time. I didn't really like him. I told him there was more law in Sears' catalog than there was in his head. And, of course, I lost the case. And the client and everything went with it. That was my drinking history. Three or four little things happened. One of the first things that happened to me, I was in court, and the chief of police sent a message that he wanted to see me. And at this stage, I was divorced, or separated at least. I had three small children. My wife had left. And the same thing had happened to the chief of police. I didn't know it at the time, but he got me into his office after, and I really didn't want to be there. I wanted to get out of there. And he said to me, "Bernard, I can smell you. And I'm going to tell you now that if you're going to make it with those three children, you got to get sober. Nobody drinking can make it." And that really rattled me. And a couple of months later, I visited my old mother. It was in February. We live in the north. And she said to me, "Bernard, have you been south?" And I said, "Mom, why would you say that?" "Oh, you seem to have a lovely tan." My face was redder than Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. That's the way it got when I drank. And then I saw the little tear. And boy, that really hurt. And a few months later, I'm visiting my father in the home for the aged. But before I went there, I went to the United Service Officers Club in Charlottetown. And while at that institution, we conducted maneuvers and air raids and sea battles and inventory engagements. And when I left there, being the senior naval officer present, I thought I was Admiral of the Fleet. And I went to see my old father in this home for the aged. And he was standing there, very disheveled. His shoes were on the wrong feet. His clothes were all crooked, not buttoned properly. He was simply a mess. And I scolded him, and I straightened him out. Got his shoes right, his clothes right. Then he looked at me, and he said these words. "I'm his only son. I had four sisters. They were blessed. They were all younger than me." He said, "You have what I wanted." I used to lie in bed at night and cry. because I couldn't get an education. But yes, you have what I wanted. And now, I thank my God, I'm not like you. And about 3 months after that, I have a client. And while we're waiting for something, on a Monday morning, I described to him how I'm feeling. I thought I had the flu. Of course, I was the doctor. And I couldn't figure out why everybody else didn't have the same flu. And I said, I'm shaking from the bottom of my feet to the top of my head. I wake up in the middle of the night shivering and shaking. And then I wake up in nightmares, and I'm not sleeping properly. And right now, I'm shaking inside so bad, I'm ready to jump out of my skin. And I stop. He put his head down, and then he looks up at me, and he said these words. He said, Bernard, I think you're having withdrawal from alcohol. Gee, that was a new one to me. He didn't say I was alcoholic. He said, I think you're having withdrawal from alcohol. And, of course, my ego took over, and I said, and who are you to make a statement like that to me in my office? And he looked at me, and he put his head down, and he said, Bernard, I'm alcoholic. And he stuck to my side for 3 days like that stuff sticks to a baby's diaper. I hope G.O. gets that neat evasion of improper language. And he took me to see a doctor, and I ended up being sent to Chitchat Farms in Reading, Pennsylvania. I arrived there on the 10th of August, 1981. And by the grace of God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been able to stay sober one day at a time. And for that, I'm extremely grateful. And I got so excited when I arrived here and picked up our pamphlet entitled A Vision for You. On my 10th anniversary, I'm sitting on my little yacht, like a little cabin cruiser. Had a wonderful name. Her name was the Lord Nelson. I named her after a friend in AA who told me to get her. And I discovered that in this book, they wrote my story. And they may have even written it before I was born. I'm not sure. I'm going to share it with you. Now and then, a serious drinker, being dry at the moment, says, I don't miss it at all. Feel better, work better, having a better time. As ex-problem drinkers, we laugh at such Sally. We know our friend is like a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. He fools himself. Inwardly, he would give anything to take half a dozen drinks and get away with them. He will presently try the old game again, for he isn't happy about his sobriety. He cannot picture life without alcohol or with alcohol. Then he will know loneliness, such as few do. He will be at the jumping-off place. He will wish for the end. We have shown how we get out from under. You may say, yes, I'm willing, but am I to be consigned to a life where I shall be stupid, boring, and glum like some righteous people I know? I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I? Have you a sufficient substitute? Yes, there is a substitute. And it is vastly more than that. It is a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. And this book is full of promises, and I read these promises. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Thus, we find the fellowship, and so will you. When I want to share with you a little bit about fear. Oh, wonderful. I got the chair's permission to continue. I'm grateful. My own fear, I still have all kinds of it, had a notorious amount of fear. I don't know why, I just had it. And I masked it like it was going out of style with the best of my ability. And I seem to have a good ability to hide that, still have. And the way I mask my fear is that I get angry. And by God, the fear's gone. I'm just walking around mad. And it takes little or no effort, but I feel much better mad than I do afraid. And I can't understand that either, but that's the way it is. I really cannot tell you an awful lot more about fear, but I did find a little solution, which means a lot to me. And I have to be a little bit honest with you. You know, being from the small place I'm from and getting invited by GSO to speak to you people this evening was a wonderful, wonderful invitation. Something that I never expected in my lifetime. And I started saying that I've got to really prepare this talk. And I really got to work on it. And I tossed and turned and I read and I slept and I woke up and I read and I turned and I made notes. I can't find the notes. I remember very little about what I read. And by God, I was afraid to be here. And then I turned to the big book. And lo and behold, I think I found something. On page 84. Quickly it says, we have entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow to understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for one's lifetime. Continue to watch, I have problems seeing. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. That's step one. Step two, we discuss them, we sum them immediately, and make amends quickly if we had harmed anyone. Then, step three, we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. And I really like the prayer bit. And on page 85, it's suggested to us as follows. We shouldn't be shy on the matter of prayer. Better men than us use it constantly. Better men than us use it constantly. It works. And then it goes on to tell you how you can pray at night and how you may pray in the morning and throughout your day. I have a couple of favorite prayers. I'm inclined to, it's a little bit like my height, I'm inclined to shorten everything. And my one prayer is, let me want what I have, the good and the bad. And then I say, show me the way. find both of them very easy and very effective. Show me the way. I have a wonderful family. My wife has told me she was going to sit in the back row. She wanted to be able to bolt in case I said something I should not have said. She hasn't gone yet, but I think she's ready. We have five children. We have put a lot of emphasis on education. And they are great supporters of Alcoholics Anonymous. I go to meetings on a regular basis. My family supports that. I've never had an interruption with going to a meeting. In fact, I've been kind of annoyed at them for not being annoyed at me being in the meeting. I said, goodness gracious, it can't change you that much, but apparently they never have been and have never interfered. That is a bit of a mystery and absolutely beautiful. And again, I have a wish for all of us that we not take that first drink and that we just do that today and every day for as long as we live. God love you.
Thanks. Did anybody get the message about their cell phones? Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Bernard. I'm going to bring up our next speaker, and that will be Deborah from Texas.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. My name is Deborah, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is January 1st of 1990. I think I heard Keith say 1992, so we're siblings here. I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be sober. One of the things, my home group is the steps they took in Houston, Texas. Some of them are here today. Thank you all very much. And the home group to me is the best thing since sliced bread. If you don't have a home group, find one, because that's a place where I've been able to go and talk about all my fears and my joys, and they listen and they love me unconditionally. So, and I only do that in my home group because they might kick me out in other places. You know, my higher power too has a sense of humor, and when you get this letter in the mail, and the first sentence in it says, "This is a loving invitation to speak at the International Convention." So the first thing I do is just cry. I don't even read the rest of it. And so for me, fear is something that I am least familiar with and have the least amount of experience with. So I'm just beginning to recognize fear. So it is an honor and a privilege to be here this morning to share my experience and strength with you guys. Now to talk about fear as a stepping stone. Now, I'm not as I can't ad lib like Bernard did, so I have notes. So today I believe in fear, and I believe it exists in me. That certainly took, it has not been easy, but I am learning. When I first got sober, I didn't know fear. I couldn't recognize it. I couldn't define it. That was probably true for many years of my recovery. But now that's not to say that I didn't have any fear. It's just to say that I couldn't recognize it. So I have, if you would permit me, I'm going to read from an article in Bill W. from the Grapevine, 1962, just a short paragraph. "For all its unusual destructiveness, we have found that fear can be the starting point for better things. Fear can be a stepping stone to prudence and to a decent respect for others. It can point the path to justice as well as to hate. And the more we have respect and justice, the more we shall begin to find the love which can suffer much and yet be freely given. So fear need not always be destructive, because the lessons of its consequences can lead us to positive values." I read that several times, and I truly believe that. He also writes that this is the foundation stone of freedom, is that of faith. A faith that, despite all worldly appearances to the contrary, causes us to believe that we live in a universe that makes sense. And I truly, truly believe that. When I first, in my early recovery, I didn't know the reason why I wasn't killed, why I didn't hurt anyone while I was drinking and driving. That belief was in a higher power, a God of my understanding. That higher power has a purpose for me to grow and teach me faith. As my faith grows, so does my inner security. I knew that, you know, my higher power was saving me for something, and it was to be Alcoholics Anonymous and be sober and to have a good life. As an active alcoholic, when I was in fear, I would drink so much that it would put me in a panic attack. I'd end up with a bag over my head to breathe. I don't know how many New Year's Eve parties you guys have been to, but I had my fair share of getting in lots of fear and having that paper bag over my head. I do not miss those days at all. Even today, I need to remind myself that when I can't breathe, I'm in panic or I'm in a fear mode. When I'm angry and when I'm mirrored, I'm also in fear. I certainly didn't recognize that really until the last maybe 5 years of my sobriety. The solution I've discovered today is that to feel the fear and do it anyway, and that my higher power will not give me any more than I can handle. That is absolutely the truth for me. Some of my fears were about what I had done when I was drunk. What did I say? Who did I hurt? What did I do? I had fear of failure, that I wasn't good enough. They'd find out about me. My college education was a lie. If they knew how dumb I was, there's no way nobody would ever hire me. When I first got sober, I guess I was in my first maybe year or year and a half of sobriety, I took a graduate entrance exam, and I failed miserably. My solution then at the time, I was standing on the campus reading my results. I just ripped up the results and stuffed it in this garbage can, just thinking that that would just vanish in the thin air and nobody would ever know. Well, that certainly wasn't the case, and I cried and I quit school and I didn't go back. That's all that I thought I could do. And my fear at that time was in full force. It was just in full force. And that was because in the very beginning I couldn't really recognize what my fear was and what to do with it. Today I know that to recognize fear, that we all have fear, and that we all process it differently. My quitting school at that time, because I failed the test, which I barely studied, you know, was not really being in the solution. I've learned that too, that you have to study. You've got to put the work into what you're going to do if you really plan on succeeding and not failing. My ego at that time was running the show. I could do it. I don't need to study. And that certainly wasn't the case. By the grace of God, I didn't drink. In my mind, I wanted to, except for the fact that in these rooms, I've learned that that's not the solution. That when I fail at something, the first thing to do, of course, I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to think to drink. But I've been around in enough of the rooms to hear other people fail, and they pick up themselves by the bootstraps, and they keep going. And that's the reason I didn't drink at that time. Looking at the fear and the cause of it is really a good start for me. I hadn't learned that yet, to trust my higher power when it came to graduate school. Although I don't today have any regrets about not going back and finishing, because that's, as I said, you know, there's no coincidences and life makes sense the way it is, and that's the way it was supposed to be, and I'm okay with that. If your higher power works the way mine does, my higher power waits till I'm ready to take a closer look. My higher power lets me know it's time to do the work. Left to my own devices, I wouldn't do it, but my higher power certainly does lead and guide me all the way. And the gift, of course, is having a relationship with a God of my understanding. And I certainly have it today, and I'm very grateful for that. I had no fear in believing or even trusting in a power greater than myself. That trust today helps me recognize when I start to cry, which happens a lot sometimes, or when my ego steps in, I need to take a look at what my motives are. I need to look at that and see. I also believe that I need to have the willingness honesty and integrity to do the work. If I'm if none of those things are working, then I'm really going to have to start all over eventually. So when I have that willingness to do that work, it really does pay off. Fear is not trusting or accepting ourselves enough to be ourselves. That was certainly true when I drank. When I was in college, I read a book. It says, "Why Am I Afraid to Tell You Who I Am?" The author writes, "I can help you to accept and open yourself mostly by accepting and revealing myself to you." And I've experienced that exactly in sharing with other alcoholics. When I've been able to share my fears and my anxieties with others, they too then can share their fear and anxieties with me. And just by doing that, it's just the comfort of that experience that we're both filled with love and faith for just having shared something so fearful. I certainly didn't learn that early on in my sobriety because I couldn't, as I said before, but certainly in my most recent recovery, I've been able to do that and really feel the power of that. It's I don't have to feel like I'm unique or I'm terminal, you know, that my story is different. Nobody else has the same fear. Well, come to find out, by sharing with another alcoholic our fears and doubts, we can come together, get the faith and confidence to keep trying and trying. And that's certainly what I've been learning to do over and over, is just to keep going. All righty. Well, now I'm talking about a few of the examples that I have. In the first, second or third year of my sobriety, I was elected treasurer of the club. And this was, I got sober in New Orleans, currently live in Houston. And so all the groups would put their money into the safe. And being elected treasurer, my job was to count the cash in the safe. So my first thought is, I can't do this. And the second thought is, why would they trust me to do this? And at the time in my program, I couldn't really promise my cash register honesty and dependability to show up once a week to count the money. But by the grace of God, I did count every dollar, every nickel, every penny, and we both walked to the bank to make the deposit. And that was a good thing. The fear was all in my head. And I fulfilled my two-year commitment to be treasurer, as well as coffee maker, coffee cup washer, bathroom cleaner, group secretary, and GSR. That's a general service representative. The next thing was about 7 years later, I had moved from New Orleans to Houston. I had already served in Houston as a GSR, and I was elected to serve as alternate DCM. That's district committee member. That service position really put me in a lot of fear. I had never done anything like that before. After serving 2 years as alternate DCM, I was elected to DCM. And I learned a lot by watching the past DCM, Marcia, what was required, and I was scared to death. She was prepared. She had a well-thought-out agenda. She had already assigned people to do either a step, a tradition, or a concept when we would go through everything that we needed to attend to in our business meeting. She kept to the time commitment. She listened while others talked without monopolizing the discussion. And then I thought, could I really do these things? You know, as an alcoholic, I'm still full of ego, control, and impatience. At the time, on a scale of 1 to 10, my bossiness was a 9. You could only imagine, if you're bossy, what that can be like if you are in a service position. Anyway, I served my job as DCM, and my job was to be a facilitator, keep the meeting on time, follow the agenda, or else I was not being of service and fear would take over. Well, I'm happy to report that facing the fear and walking through the process, I survived and also learned to be very diplomatic, loving, patient. And what a tremendous gift that was after 4 years to just have that unroll itself with the trust of my higher power. Certainly before that whole thing, I never would have thought that my bossiness would go down. But it did. Okay. Now, the last example I have is actually my most favorite example. And let's see. I was in tremendous fear. My higher power walked and held me during this entire process. It was the time of our area elections. And my service sponsor asked me if I was standing by Third Legacy. And I said, what's that? If you're not familiar with the Third Legacy, it's in the service manual. Ask your service sponsor or ask anyone to explain it to you. It is quite fascinating and really quite wonderful when you actually experience it live at an election of your at the area level and all throughout. And so I said, okay, I said I stand for everything except secretary. That's the last thing I wanted to do. I didn't think I could do it. I can't even spell. I would fail. I'd be very embarrassed because I'd have to get up like this and read the minutes. And it was too much for me. You know, it's that fear of the unknown. Well, so right at the time of the elections, I had to go on a training class to out of state, on a field trip to Oregon, and I couldn't be there for the elections. So I wish it would have been that easy, but it wasn't. I don't think I would have been able to get off the hook like that with my service sponsor. And so what I did is I submitted a letter stating what my intentions were, that I would stand for everything except secretary. And my sponsor said, you know, while you're on your trip, just pray, meditate, ask your higher power for whatever, you know, God's will is. So I get to where I am out of town, and the elections were here, and I'm getting this need or this feeling that I need to call my sponsor and reconsider my letter. So I said, all right, I'll stand Third Legacy. Now, I don't know about you guys, but when my higher power communicates to me, he communicated to me at that time. It's not so much now, but at that time, right through my stomach. You know, it's right in the meeting, and people are sharing, and it's really good stuff, and you get this feeling in your stomach. Well, that means you're supposed to talk. At least that's how my higher power interprets it for me. And so I get this knot, and I get these butterflies. So even though I was scared to death and of the whole process, I still said, okay, go submit my name. Well, you guessed it. I was elected secretary. And my friend Mark called me, and he said, guess what? You're elected secretary. And I said, well, that was my higher power's will for me. I could say now that I love that position. I loved it so much. It's amazing. Because I learned to listen. I learned about the AA structure. I learned how to have faith in my higher power. And once again, he did not give me more than I could handle. Finally, my message to you is that it's okay to have fear as long as you have a little faith that you could walk through the fear as I did and I still do. As I worked the steps and served in the fellowship, my faith got stronger and trusting myself became easier. The trust is not mine, but the trust is in my higher power. When I learned in AA that I needed to give my fears and worries to a higher power, today what I got was faith, although my fear does show up still occasionally. I know that I'm not a failure. I know I'm good enough to earn my degree from college. I was hired because I have the knowledge. I'm a hard worker, dependable, trustworthy, and love life. Life is life, and I live life with my higher power at all times. There isn't anything that I can't handle as long as I have faith, courage, and love for myself and others. In closing, I'd like to read a prayer that's my mantra, and that's the 11-step prayer. And please forgive me if I cry. Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there's sadness, joy. O divine master, grant that I may not seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is by giving that we receive, it is by pardoning that we are pardoned, it is by dying that we are born to eternal life. Thank you so much for being here and giving me the opportunity to serve.
Okay, I'd like to bring up our last speaker, and that is Christine. Christine?
Good morning. My name is Christy, and I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is August the 9th, 1988. I'm a member of the New Beginnings Women's Group that meets at St. John Anglican Church in Cobble Hill. I'm very happy to be here, and I'm honored to have been asked to share. I don't have notes, and I'm going to let God help me out here and hope that I don't just ramble all over the place. One of my favorite slogans, not card slogans, but slogan that I've learned through this program that has helped me prepare for this is, where there is fear, there is no faith. And where I have faith, I will feel no fear. And that has been a saving grace for me in the last few years of my sobriety. It was not there at the beginning. So my story that I'm going to share is how I got from there to here. My story with my drinking was, as I'm sure for all of us, absolute fear-based. I, too, suffered from panic attacks, panic disorder, to the point where I became a daily drinker. Alcohol was my medicine. I needed it to basically do anything. I got to the point at the end of my drinking where to get out of bed, I was thinking about a drink. To go to the store meant I had to drive a car, which meant I had to have at least three drinks. The fear just kept getting worse. The need for the alcohol grew greater. I got to the point in my drinking where I actually was afraid to leave my house. I had fear to get the mail, which was at the end of my driveway. I had fear when the phone rang, when somebody knocked at the door. If I wasn't ready for them, I would hide. That is at the very end of my drinking, but of course it was progressive, but I used alcohol from the very beginning. It just took the fear away. I never learned to deal with the fear because I always just treated it with alcohol. When it came to the point of not being able to use the alcohol anymore, that's when I had to find a new coping mechanism. I don't do anything, as most of us, I'm sure, are the same, unless I'm forced to change. If it's working for me, I don't change it. When it stops working for me, I'm forced to change. In this case, my physical body gave out. My pancreas was jeopardized, I guess you could say. I ended up in the emergency room and was lying on a gurney. Many doctors and nurses rushing around me. Everybody was going, oh, my God, oh, my God. And I just knew I was in serious trouble. My father had died from pancreatitis. He went to the hospital one day and died 7 days later. So as I'm lying on the gurney, I assume that I have 7 days of life left in me. I looked up at the ceiling, and I said, God, I will do anything. Please just don't let me die. That was my sobriety date. The reason I tell you that is that I asked God, with every ounce of heart I had left, to spare me. When I left the hospital 7 days later, I'd had 7 days of sobriety. First time I had not had a drink in a day in maybe 5 years. I was a daily, absolute daily drinker for the last 5 years of my drinking. So here I am 7 days sober, and I leave that hospital thinking not about God. I left God on the gurney at that hospital. And I walked out thinking I was powerful, I was sober, and I could do this. And that's how I got sober. That's what I did. I got powerful, and I got willful, and I was going to do this. And it worked. That's still my sobriety date. I've been sober every day since. It just didn't work very well. And my I didn't drink again, but I had all those fears to deal with. And I didn't have any tools to deal with them with. I didn't have a toolbox. My little box was empty. All it had inside it was my willpower. And it's amazing how strong we are as alcoholics. I think we all sort of come from the trenches where we've had to overcome a lot of consequences as a result of our drinking. So we know how to manage pretty well. And that's what I did. I got powerful. I told people what to do, when to do it, how to do it. And, you know, it worked. It just didn't work very well. My husband is also in the program. He got sober 4 months after I did. We took my brother to a meeting. We thought he needed help. We'd never been to an AA meeting, but we thought he needed help. So we took him to a meeting, and it's funny, you know, it's not funny. It's really quite sad, but it's honest. I sat in that meeting looking around the room, and I'd been sober about a year at that point, thinking, wow, all these people need a meeting. And actually it was suggested. Joe actually took, my husband took my brother to the meeting, and somebody suggested that I go with him. So anyways, I went to the meeting, and I went to look, but I just didn't really see anything in the room that I needed because I'd been sober for a year. And I thought, well, you know, obviously I don't need any of this. I can see that you do, but I don't. And so anyways, I liked the people, liked the laughter, you know, all the good things that we find in a meeting. So I went back to the meeting, and the meeting, I must tell you, was at the end of my street. It still is. So I really didn't have any reason not to go. I could have walked to the meeting. But and it's funny because when you go to a meeting and you don't think of yourself as really needing the meeting, I found people talking about things that I didn't like what they were saying. I didn't like the people. That guy over there said something funny, or she said something funny, and we'd leave the meeting and critique it. And anyway, so skip ahead 5 years. My mother died, and I had been self-will run riot for 5 long years, and I had created a wake of hurt feelings and with my family members. I'm sure they were just at the end of their rope with me. I've just had enough. Anyways, when my mother died, it really, something came over me, and it's like a big snowball, and it was this big snowball that had been chasing me, and finally it kind of flattened me, and I got up off the ground, and I realized that if I don't get help, something really bad is going to happen. I didn't think I was going to take a drink, but looking back on it, I was probably just at the door. And I went back to that meeting, and I remember looking at the steps on the wall, and finally being as desperate as I was on the gurney in that hospital, and looking at those steps and going, I will do anything to get sober. I mean, sober in mind, not just sober from drink. And it obviously opened the door to my willingness to do the steps and to do the work required. And like I say, I don't do anything until I hit that wall and I can't go any further with it. I couldn't go any further with my drinking, and now I couldn't go any further in my, I will say recovery, but I haven't recovered yet. Anyways, went to the meeting, saw the steps, became willing. And I know my fear was not the first step. Of course, I'd only done the first half of the first step, which said that I admitted I was powerless over alcohol. I hadn't seen that my life was unmanageable until I was 5 years sober. At that point, I realized I had nothing. I was empty, absolutely empty, and I had no tools to deal with it. So I became willing on that day. Then that's on to step two and three, that God thing. Well, here I am, looking at the steps and going, God, ooh, I don't do God. No, funny, isn't it? Anyways, I thought, well, skip two and three, and what's the next one? Oh, that's four. Ooh, I don't think I want to do that either. So what I ended up doing was I skipped two and three because I really just don't know about that God thing. And I thought, well, okay, we'll work on that four. And didn't even have a sponsor. So, I started reading it. Well, no, I can't do that. So I'll skip ahead. But at 5 years sober, I became willing. I'm still floating around. I don't know what I'm doing. I end up in a step study group. Somebody suggests I go to a step study group. I can't tell you how important that is to my recovery. I went to a step study group, and I learned how to do the steps. I learned what the steps were saying because I was being, I'll say forced, but I'll say guided. Guided to read them as they were written. And I was also introduced to the 12 steps and 12 traditions. And in the fourth step of the 12 steps and 12 traditions, that's where my learning really came full force, is I learned that in that, the first paragraph says, we have instincts, God-given, therefore good. And that was the key that opened up my recovery, was learning that what I do and how I do it are based in instincts. It says that we have three, and it says, you know, why they are, what they are, sexual, so that we reproduce, security, so that we keep ourselves protected from the elements, and, you know, we have food so we can eat, and societal, so we don't kill each other. That made sense to me. Sounds really simple, but that's the way my mind works. I needed to know why I needed this information. So my fear, every time I feel fear now, because of the information I was given, because of the way it was brought to me, I now have a guideline as to what to do with it. I used to just drink when I had fear. I used to get angry when I had fear. Now when I have fear, I ask myself, what is this? And step four for me is the exact recipe for how to find out what it is I'm afraid of and what to do about that. And I say recipe because if I made a great chocolate cake and somebody had given me a recipe and it worked, wouldn't I go back and use the recipe again? Why would I try it a different way? So when I learned about these steps in that step study group, it worked. And so now I go back and I use it. So that's what I'm bringing here today is I feel fear, and to me it's like an engine light. It's like a little light comes on. I feel it, like you said, in that sort of pit of my stomach. And I say, okay, something's going on here. What is it? Then I can go through, and for me it's the lateral writing of step four. And it says, you know, reason for anger at the beginning, and I sometimes substitute resentment, regret, and remorse, because that's the way it comes up for me. And then I can say, okay, have I done something? Did I not do something? Do I owe somebody an amend? Where have I been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and afraid? And that's my answer to my fear. It's really just that simple. So having practiced that for probably, you know, the last, I don't know, maybe 10 years, I'm getting pretty good at it if I practice it. That's what's in my toolbox. The toolbox that I have is now full of those practical things that I can do in response to the fear that comes up. Feel the fear, do it anyway. I have all these mottos, all these slogans that people have told me. If I had to stop and sit down and think this through, I wouldn't maybe do it. I would balk. I would put up all these, you know, why I can't, why I shouldn't, why I'm not good enough, whatever. I got that letter. You know, you were asked with love to come and share. My first thought was, I don't think so. But one of my mottos that somebody taught me is I will never turn down an AA request. If it wasn't for that motto, I probably would have had the cold, or I would have had, you know, I had a million reasons why I couldn't be here. I just had to do it because somebody asked. And that willingness, you know, how it works, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, it's the willingness that comes with the practice of the steps of this program. It's the honesty that comes. It's open-mindedness that comes. That's the cure for my fear. My fear is a balk at all of those things. So I don't know how to put it in any sort of order. I bounced all over the place how I got this program. Like I say, I bounced up to step four, and then I bounced back to steps two and three because I had to see that faith worked before I had faith in faith. It's crazy. I know it doesn't work maybe that way for some people. And can you imagine the gall when I finally got it and that light went on and I had such an apology to make to God for how long I had shoved him in the corner after he had so graciously saved my life, August the 9th, 1988. And I know now why I had fear of God was because of all the things that I had done that I was so ashamed of. And because of the program, because of step four, because of writing it out and understanding it and making my amends and changing my life and living it more towards God's will than my will, I have the faith. It's a circle. It goes around and around and around. So where I have fear, I have lost the faith. And where I have faith, I need not feel fear. I can if I want to. I don't have to. This has been the most... My heart is so full, I can't stand it. I thought I would be so nervous up here, and yet I'm so full of love, I can't believe it. This is great. I was just going to say that snowball that was chasing me, that flattened me at 5 years sober, was a collection of all my guilt, my shame, and remorse. And it had grown and grown and grown. And I believe that it would have kept growing exponentially once you find the answer in this room. Because once you know what you need to do and you don't do it, it grows even faster. So that's the thing for me, is as soon as I feel that fear, I try to find out what it is. And that for me is just simply, where have I been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and afraid? And where do I owe an amend? And make that amend as soon as I can. And that amend may simply be doing it a different way. It isn't always an apology, and sometimes my stories are empty. It's changing. It's all about change. And my understanding that sometimes my first motive for doing something isn't always my best motive. That I need to sometimes look to see what I'm really trying to do here. That second motive isn't always the best either. Because they're both my motives, they're not God's will. So it's all a lesson, and it's just wonderful to be here and get a sponsor, get a service sponsor, get into step study groups. They're amazing, because without that, I would not have read the book as many times as I have, and I wouldn't have learned about the 12 and 12. That, to me, has been, it's my directions. It's like my recipe book. It tells me exactly how to do it. And I just want to say thank you for being here, and enjoy the weekend. Thank you.
Once again, can we thank all the speakers tonight? There, this morning, Okay, the meeting is now open. There is a mic in the middle of the room here. If you have any comments or want to share some experience, strength, and hope, please do. I will be keeping track of the time, and I will just ask you to, I'll just say thank you for sharing. And then allow the next person to share. Or you can all stand here and listen to my voice for the next. There we go.
Hi, my name is Larry Taylor. I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And fear. This is a question for whoever can answer this one. But it's more of, I didn't want to be here because I had fear. And I was willing to sell my ticket and everything and just not come. And my sponsor told me to shut up and get on the plane. But my most thing is I talk to my sponsor about is a fear of commitment. Not just a fear of commitment in this program, but a fear of commitment in relationships. And I'm trying to find a way of getting over that. And I know it's just the fear of, you know, it's always that, you know, I'm going to wait and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And I like what you said, and you know, I applaud you. But I just need some guidance on how to get over that fear of relationships and that fear of commitment. Because my thinking is, if you really know who I am, you will definitely run the other way. So that's what I need some guidance in. If you can get some input on that, I'd appreciate it very much.
I'm short. My name is Carol. I'm from Margate, Florida. My home group is the 441 group. And, all right, 441. And I stayed out a long time because of fear, a long time. But I got here when I was supposed to get here. Actually, God put the 441 group right across the street from my house. He also put a Dunkin' Donut next to it. He also put a garbage can outside where I used to throw my wine bottles. And any other, sometimes my dry cleaning, too, because I got everything mixed up in my trunk. I'm a rep, and I used to say I'm the trunk drunk. And, you know, fear was just coming up here to say thank you. You know, I felt the fear, and I said, well, you know, get up there and say thank you. Thank you for, you know, sharing your experience, strength, and hope. Because when I walked into that meeting, 7 a.m. Daily Reflections, and I sat there, and I cried for about 6 months, and they kept tissues on hand, you know, as I did a fifth step and didn't know what a fifth step was every morning. And, you know, the home group that I still have today, and you know, I just came off of being a service junkie for about a few years, and I feel very relaxed because I see people doing service, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, but this is doing service, just being here and saying, you know, whenever you get here, no matter what, get a home group, get a sponsor, give out your phone number, go there and hate it for a few years. I did that. And when I settled down, I'm one of those who, and I like to share this for people who want to try this, I left AA for about 21 months and thought I was cured and floated on my own, and then that I was going to have a romance with Captain Morgan. But God stopped that, and he did intervene it. You know, there was that stopping point because I had enough of AA in me. And I looked up at a sign in this person's house, a non-alcoholic who drank and could drink, and it said, live, laugh, and love. And I had enough AA where I said, you're not living, you're not laughing, and you're not being loved. And I walked back into my home group, and today, you know, it's beyond my wildest dreams. Thanks.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mark Deckard. I'm an alcoholic. I'm from St. Louis, Missouri, and I have a fear of public speaking. But it's not that bad. Thanks for the speakers. I really enjoyed every one of you. And what I was thinking of when I walked in here is through the 19 years of my sobriety, I've had it's been kind of an enigma. You know, there are things that I should be fearful of that I'm not. You know, I have absolutely no fear of getting mugged by anybody or what have you. And I got my pilot's license in sobriety. And, you know, if we need to go exchange something at the store or whatever, my wife, we couldn't possibly do that. I'm like, give it to me. You know, I'm going to go get our money back. You know, or if I got to confront somebody over the phone about something, you know, I'll get in their face or whatever. But it's the silly little things. It's calling customers. You know, I have this, you know, the low self-esteem, you know, fear. Dealing with my boss and business partner, you know. Fear masquerading as anger, you know. I'll get angry with this guy when really it's fear and it's usually based in something that I should be doing and I know damn good and well I'm not. And that's something that I need to work on. So thanks everybody for speaking and I love you all. Bye.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jamie, and I'm a very grateful alcoholic, and I share an August birthday with you, and thank you all for being here. I actually got sober in New York, was in Florida for 15 years, and now I'm in California, so I know about reaching out and trying to get in the center. I just wanted to bring up one thing, because I used to hear a lot in the rooms, you know, faith and fear can't live together. But I know, I've learned that I can be in fear and still have faith, you know, and that was just something that I used to hear a lot, that you couldn't have one, you know, you couldn't be in one and have the other, you know, and I realized today, because of through experience, that, you know, you can have the fear but still have faith. And, the longer I stay sober, the more life happens. And the more I see myself getting down on my knees and just giving it, you know, because that's like you said, unless I'm up against the wall, sometimes I forget that I'm not in control and that I don't have the best thinker still, you know, and that the best results I've ever gotten was when I'm not in control. Anyway, that's it. Thanks.
My name is Humble Bob, and I'm an alcoholic from British Columbia. And when I first was sober, I had a lot of fear. Half the time I was afraid that AA wouldn't work, and the other half the time I was afraid it was going to work. And for me, I always had I have another disease. It's called more. No matter how much I have, I need just a little bit more. And I was afraid I wasn't going to get it. And for me, the word fear stands for false evidence appearing real or failure expected and received. And for me, I had to come to believe in a power greater than myself in order to overcome this. And I'm very glad you're all here, and thank you for my sobriety.
Hi, my name is Deb, and I love the question that was posed a few times before about how do you face your fears. And one thing that somebody in the program had taught me is that when the pain of the past is greater than the fear of the future, then the change happens. And I love that. And I love when I take it through the fear inventory. And in that second column, my sponsor had me literally write out what is the historical content of the fear and what is the current content of the fear, because that put boundaries around it for me. And then, because if it's left in my own mind, it is bigger than Alaska, you know, and it gets bigger and bigger. And so, you know, one of the first steps that I do is that when I'm facing a fear, I think about in the moments of my day when I'm doing it anyway. You know, it's like somebody taught, you know, the fear of commitment. I'm the girl that quit jobs every like 6 months, but I'm in these rooms for 10 years. And that's the fear unraveling. And when I can just be in that place that says, gosh, look at how I'm doing it anyway, then the fear gets smaller and smaller. So thanks.
Hi, my name's Tanya. I'm an alcoholic. It's wonderful to be here. I want to thank everybody for speaking. I stood up because I had that feeling in my stomach, and so I thought it was a sign that I needed to say something. I got sober on Long Island, New York, almost 11 years ago, and they told me that if you knew how good you had it, your head would explode. And I'm really glad I didn't know how good I had it at the time I got sober, because I would have run screaming if I had known that I get this opportunity to feel what the path of most resistance is and to continue that way. And because of that, I've had a number of amazing experiences in my sobriety, including getting a doctorate and moving to a country and a city where there was no English-speaking AA and living for 4 years with my sobriety, and walking through the fear of getting the hardest, scariest possible job in my field and losing my 7-year relationship and getting more than my wildest dreams, you know. And it's because I did those things that were the hardest, you know, not the easiest, and I did those things that scared me the most, not the ones that were comfortable and safe. So I'm really grateful to be here today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, family. My name is Winston, and I'm an alcoholic. My sober date is the 12th of February, 84. I'm from Brooklyn. And fear, we have to pray when fear. I never knew fear because I picked up a drink at 12 years. But I went through some fear the last 2 years, and with some major operations that I didn't want to go through. But I pray, and I went through them very good. But my biggest fear is when I took my property and gave to my children, sign it over to them, and to start to misuse it. And I pray about it, and God let it happen. I mean, above my wildest dream, that my children signed the property back over to me through prayer. You know, and I mean, they could have sell it without asking me a question. But I want to let you know that prayer works. Thank you for letting me share.
Hi, I'm Jeffrey, and I'm a grateful recovering addict and alcoholic. Hi, thank you. I'm visiting from New York City. I'm very grateful. I've been given the grace to just celebrate 14 years about a week ago. Some genius taught me in my very early days to pray, to have the fear released. I used to wake up in the morning, and as soon as I realized I was awake, my hands would be sweaty, and I'd have a stomachache, and I would be waiting for the first thing to go wrong that day. And it could be something as simple as just missing the elevator. If I left my apartment and just missed the elevator, that was a bad sign. And if I pulled my car out of the garage and the light turned from green to red, I may as well just go home for that day, because missing the elevator and then missing the light, nothing could possibly go right that day, you know? And so some genius said to me, when you wake up, slip to the floor before you do anything and just say, please release me from the fear. And it took about 2 years. The fear is not gone completely. I confront it on a daily basis. I've learned that I have to confront my uncomfortability. I travel by myself purposely because it makes me very nervous. Very bizarre things happen to me. I'm in the airport, and my jacket gets caught in the zipper of my luggage, and I have to run through the airport all bent over to catch my plane. I look like Groucho Marx. That can't even happen to a person, but that's the kind of stuff that happens to me when I travel. And so I flew to Austin, and I made myself drive to San Antonio alone. Thank God for a GPS. And I find my way around. I was nervous this morning that I would be the only one that didn't get a green holder. that they were going to run out before I got there. And I'm honest when I say that. I really had that thought that they were going to say, I'm sorry, but we just ran out, you know. So after 14 years, it shows that some are still sicker than others. And I'm a work in progress, but I'm so grateful to be here. And thanks for my sobriety.
Thank you. I was going to say, it was great to hear the laughter, eh? I remember a long timer mentioned, one day I heard him speak, and I went up to him, I go, Bob, you're pretty funny. He goes, yeah, we cried long enough. So, anyways, I'm an alcoholic, a member of the Beaches Group. My name's Eddie Jasicki, and I'm from Toronto. Hi. Just quickly, yes, I believe that when I'm desperate enough, I'm willing to listen to whatever is presented in front of me. And I always like the slogan, more will be revealed. And 5 years ago, I had cancer, and boom, I'm dead. And a couple members were put in my path, and one, they said, Eddie, what are you afraid of? And I mentioned to them that I had cancer, and they said, you have to do step three. You have to turn your life over to God, because we don't really know what's going to happen. So that was a start. And then the second thing was that they explained to me about a meditation, a visualization. And anyway, so I did the meditation, and I kept doing it. And what happens is... I guess you could say it's on page 55 in the big book. I tapped into the great reality, which is deep down within. And I just followed that spirit. And, so I'll finish off with this. Oh, but anyways, that's good too, because what happens when you meditate? Yeah, no, I'm serious. What happens is I connect the dots to where, like, the fear is coming from. And I found, because I meditate, it's easier to connect the dots of how I'm acting today is really based on growing up. And I came up to like a full of fear when my parents fought and everything else. But I was still acting in the day like that. And I wasn't aware of it until I connected that dot. And so when I connect that dot in meditation, I bring it back up and I acknowledge those emotions. Because I never acknowledged those emotions. And the first one was I was frozen. And then the next one was I was full of fear. And once I acknowledge that, I let it go so I don't have to live in yesterday's emotions. I live in today's emotions.
Thank you. We have three other people at the microphone before the meeting ends.
Just one quick thing.
Thank you.
55 years a member. She got on her medallion. Breathe in faith, exhale fear.
Hi, my name is Pam. I'm an alcoholic. Area 44, New Jersey. Hi, Keith. Thanks for sharing, everybody. And, yeah, I have a pit in my stomach, too. Fear. When God removed alcohol from me in 1979, I was deathly afraid. Alcoholics Anonymous gave me a life. Everything I have today, I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous. 8 years ago, I, too, was diagnosed with cancer. I just recently got out of the hospital 2 months ago. And for me, getting up every day and living a life is all because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I would not be here without AA, and that's what I wish to share. Thank you.
My name's Tommy. I am an alcoholic. I'm also a homegrown Texas boy. Luckily, I didn't have to travel like some of you folks did. You know, fear was the catalyst into my getting sober. I was I woke up in a mental institution. I had signed my rights over to the state of Texas. You want to talk about a Kodak moment? Well, the day they let me go about 9 days later, and... the shrink at the time said, Mr. Bell, I suggest that you go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm standing out in that parking lot. And for the first time in my life, I admitted to me that I was afraid. Now, it took me a hell of a lot longer to be able to tell you. You know, but to me, that was the motivation that it took for me to get to AA. I actually listened. And, you know, one of the things a good sponsor has done for me is it taught me that I spent most of my life running on autopilot. I was acting and reacting to life on emotions that I did not know I had, much less could understand. And through the process of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have come to some degree of an understanding of what makes me tick. You know? And one little thing, and then I'll shut up. I was at a meeting one time, and there was a newcomer that based fear, and this was her analogy, was effing everything and run. You know, and I understood that. And then when the meeting was over, there was a gentleman that had been sober for about 30 years. And he come up and he said, young lady, he said, there's another analogy for that. And that's face everything and recover. And I try to live my life that way today through the help of AA. Thanks.
My name's Charlie. I'm an alcoholic from Oklahoma City. I was so fearful while drinking that they made me director of alcohol education at the university. So I went men's to thousands and thousands of students. I was so fearful when I was drunk. The most fearful thing in the world to me was a judge, and went before many judges. And the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous gave me back my life. And I faced my fear, and I'm now a prosecutor. And I'm so grateful that God has a sense of humor. And at every point in my recovery, he gives me just what I need. Thank you all for sharing your fears and your solutions.
Thank you very much for attending today. Thank you to everybody who went up to the mic. I just want to read something out of our big book. It's on page 68. It's the last paragraph of the fear inventory. And it goes, "We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality as a way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attentions to what He would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear.